Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. I hope you're very well. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer. I'm a paediatric therapist and I'm the director of Ed Elf Child Therapy Limited and its sister training company for therapists, the Child Hypnotherapy Institute. And I've recently been diagnosed autistic myself. So I'm very inspired to bring you a diverse and rich range of autistic voices from the community. People who are diagnosed, people who are not diagnosed, people who work alongside and collaborate with autistic families or autistic adults, people who identify as neurodivergent. Please come and join the conversation. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at Evelyn, that's E-V-A-L-Y-N-N-E, at childhypnotherapyinstitute.com, or contact me via the show. Thank you for joining me with Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio.
That makes you feel good.
Hello, my special guest today is Vanessa Hughes, known as Nessie. And Nessie is a self-confessed crazy cat lady with a passion for pink, nature, creativity, and diversity. She's a mum, partner, singer-songwriter, teacher, dancer, actress, writer, nurse, listening ear, gardener, and chronic illness warrior, and much more. And she hopes that all of her creativeness will help her website, which is autistic-ness.com, to grow and blossom into something she wishes was available when she was first inquiring about autism. Nessie's passionate about increasing awareness and acceptance of autism as a natural and beautiful part of being human, particularly in women and girls. And she says, let's celebrate autisticness. And I love that. So welcome to the show, Nessie.
Oh, thank you, Evelyn. What a build up. What a fantastic introduction. I'm blushing already.
Oh, wow. Absolutely well deserved. I mean, we'll talk about that a bit more later. So, but I always like to start my show with something we're grateful for. Many years ago, I worked with an organization doing music workshops with children and young people called Red Zebra. They're amazing. And I'm hoping they'll come on one of the shows. But they introduced this to me, that every time we had a work meeting or any time we went to start a workshop or anything they did, they always started with being grateful and aware. And I've kept that going because I just thought it was a wonderful way to start anything.
Isn't it? What a lovely idea. I like that.
Yes, so thank you, Red Zebra. So what I'm grateful for today is having a garden, I have to say. Yeah, and I know there are many people in the world who do not have luxury of a garden, and I realise how rich my life is for having one. And I'm a great believer in the power of nature and the outdoors. And outdoor education and just being outside, getting my hands dirty, planting seeds, watching them grow or not grow is just wonderful. It's so healing and great for well-being. So that's what I'm grateful for today. What about yourself, Nessie?
Totally agree with those. Now, I knew this question was coming today, so I had trouble deciding, you know, as you do when you're autistic, it can be a difficult thing. So I've chosen two, if I may. The first one is that my family are all well and safe, despite much adversity over the years and despite a lot of difficulties, obviously, in our world today. And my second thing is I'm really grateful for my autistic abilities, because without those, I wouldn't be doing this and I wouldn't be able to share my knowledge and my experience and help and support others, particularly through my writing. So I'm really grateful for that.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you for coming on the show. I'm sure our listeners are going to really enjoy today. So You describe a day in August 2006 as the best day of your life. Can you tell me and our listeners about that and why you love your autistic self?
I can indeed. So that was when I got my official diagnosis. And it really was the best day of my life. It was the first day I really knew who I was. You know, I'd spent 46 years trying to be something that I wasn't, trying to live an unnatural existence, really. I had no idea what autism was up until that very point. And so I discovered my true self, you know, that the me that I'd believed was broken, the me that always seemed dysfunctional or wrong or, you know, all those things. And I felt really just liberated from all those social norms and all those expectations that I'd enforced on myself because I believed that's the way you had to be. So apart from that, I found it extremely validating to be told something I actually knew at that point. I just wanted someone to tell me, to confirm it, someone who, you know, in quotation marks, knew what they were talking about, a professional. But I did already know deep down. So from that moment, I was able to then stop being this false me and find my tribe, find people that I had things in common with. Just be myself and love myself and forgive myself, really. Forgive any mistakes I thought I'd made. Forgive the way I was. Forgive my quirks and my little crazinesses. And just be kind to myself. And unless you can do that, I don't think you're really living. You know, I just think we're living under false pretenses otherwise. So, yeah, and it enabled me to appreciate the strengths and the talents that come from being autistic, accept the deficits that I thought they were as being just differences, and really just stop wasting my time and energy on the whole trying to be neurotypical, non-autistic, and fitting in with people that I just didn't fit in with. It just gave me permission to stop doing all that and just go and live and be me.
That's absolutely wonderful to hear. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I have to completely agree with you. I'm 54 and I was diagnosed in September last year, autistic. And I'm still in that kind of early days of, okay. I'm really happy about it. I also see it as a discovery rather than a diagnosis in itself. Yeah. But I agree with you. I feel as though I've spent long periods of my life not fully living. I've always worked and I've always found my identity through my work and through being a parent to two wonderful sons. But aside from that, I found it really hard because I think I've been out and lived my life. Don't get me wrong. I'm quite a gregarious, go-getting character. But then I would really struggle for days, weeks, sometimes months on end as a result of being out in the social world as it is, trying to be something I'm not. So I'm not blaming anyone else for that. I think it's definitely about self-acceptance and self-love. And I like that you say you feel like you now have permission to just be you. And I feel exactly like that. It's come as a big relief to go, it's not that there's something massively wrong with me and I just, you know, I can't function like other people. I'm not as, I don't know, equipped to deal with life as other people or there must be something wrong with my mind or my brain or, you know. It's incredibly liberating and invigorating. And it's partly why I started this show. I've worked with autistic young people for many years without realizing I was autistic. myself, but just loving and finding a great connection with the wonderful spirits that I've met along the way and still do that. So it's a great learning journey, isn't it? It is.
I can understand everything you said there. Yeah.
Well, you're a passionate advocate for autistic people. So what are some of the strengths that you have experienced or still experience as an autistic woman, and what are the sort of challenges?
So I'll start with the strengths because I like to go positive.
Yes.
I do know, like my late dad, actually, I'm extremely loyal. And I'm so proud of that now. It wasn't something I was so proud of before, but I realise it's a very autistic trait. I'm really loyal, really honest, often too honest, extremely compassionate. I have a very deep intuition. I mean, my intuition, you know, a lot of women have a kind of a sixth sense, I think, and we often don't listen to it. But I realize more and more and more how strong it is, especially when you look back in hindsight, which is always a wonderful thing, isn't it? And with that goes the fact that I'm a deep thinker. I think deeply. I, as women, we've grown up kind of studying people, especially other women, to learn how it's done. You know, how do I be like a real normal woman? You know, so we've grown up being a deep thinker and a people watcher. I'm very creative. That's another thing. And I've found over the years that I've been able to do anything that either I've really needed to for the family, you know, for finances or something, or that I've really been interested in. And when I say really interested in, as you know, we autistic people do get intense about our intense interests and hobbies. And yeah, I look back on those and think, wow, that's so autistic. That was so autistic. What else? I'm very good at advocating for others. Not so much myself in the past, better now. But I began life as a nurse. That was my initial career. And I was always a bit known by the top consultants for being the one that might speak up a bit too much, or for the patient, I mean, not for myself. So I have always been keen on advocating for other people. And I do that now as well, not just for autism and neurodiversity, but for disabilities and various things. And my brother once said to me, Ness, you always looked out for the underdog like our father did. And I thought about it and I thought, I do. I've always been like that. You know, I can't bear people being bullied or punished or ill-treated in any way, or being accused of being dishonest, anything like that. And I've always been sort of drawn to those people more than the confident ones who have it all and, you know, don't really have much to say about a lot of things, if that's making sense.
It is making a lot of sense. And yeah, and before you get into talking about the challenges a bit later on, after we've listened to some of your lovely music, actually, I'd like to go back to some of those strengths, because one of the reasons for doing the show is to bust some myths and misconceptions.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do that. And you've already mentioned a few things that I want to cover. And some of those things are that you are compassionate and intuitive and a deep thinker. And I think there's a lot of misconception that us autistic people in general are devoid of emotion and unable to feel for others and feel empathy. Yeah. And actually, I find that, yes, there are some people, and there are some non-autistic people who
exactly.
Are really kind of narcissistic and not able to empathize. But in the main, most of the autistic people I come into contact with and have done over the past 7 years are really creative, very compassionate, deeply sensitive, almost overthinkers, yeah, who need to actually spend lots of time sort of decombobulating, is that a word? From
good one, like
you know,
that.
From the anxiety that they can experience from feeling a real depth to their feeling for other people and their empathy and a lack of injustice, you know, and really.
Oh, yeah, that's a strong one.
Yeah.
Really strong.
So we'll come back to that later. So talking about challenges then, what's your experience now and what's it been?
Well, I was going to say, actually, one of my negatives that I think is negative in a way is that I'm too empathetic, too compassionate, and I find it very painful. I know you were going to talk about it later, but I'll bring it up now anyway. Yeah, I have so much empathy. I can cry at the drop of a hat. I can cry at people's weddings I've never met before. But I just feel so much. I feel things. I may not be able to read people's faces very well, but I certainly feel and sense those emotions. And they hurt a lot of the time. They're actually physically painful sometimes. And that can be a negative for my own health, you know, my own mental and physical health. And it's something I've had to learn tactics to block a little bit somehow. You know, it's, yeah, it can be difficult. But aside from that, I'm rubbish at maths. I'm really rubbish at maths. And I can say it now. Okay, I'm good at these things, but I'm really rubbish at maths. I'm a bit too much of a perfectionist. I know saying I'm a bit of a perfectionist, you can't really say that, can you? But I am, because there are perfectionists who are more perfectionistic than I am. But I am pretty perfectionist, definitely. I'm quite intolerant of a lot of people. Generally, your average, I don't know. I don't even know if it's non-autistic people or what. There's a lot of people I'm quite intolerant of because they just don't have any humility or all those other things I talked about, honesty and all that kind of stuff. I'm not tolerant of that. I try, but I'm not very good at it. I'm stubborn and fiercely independent, as anybody around me will tell you. And what else, really? I mean, there are just the challenges of being autistic, the anxiety, the flexibility issues, the kind of general challenges. They're very sort of general autistic people's challenges.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Hello, you're listening to Evelyn Charmer. This is Autistic Voices, and today I have the pleasure of talking to Nessie Hughes from Autisticness. And she's just been talking to us about all of her strengths and some challenges. We've been talking about feelings and emotions and empathy and compassion and those kinds of things. So, Nessie, you're living in Belgium.
I am.
You describe yourself as an expat. So explain why. How come? What led you to Belgium, and what's it like being in an international community?
Interesting questions. So we came here about 13 years ago for my husband's work, actually. Prior to that, we were in Switzerland, in Basel, for about 2 years. So we've been out of the UK, where I was born, for about 15 years. Yeah. It's very interesting. I think I've never felt so much as at home as I do, not in Belgium, but being in an international community, which is where you tend to get dumped when you first come here. You know, you tend to mix with, through your children, with the international schools or with other international parents. And that's where we all say it in our family, we belong. And one of the biggest reasons, I think, is that because cultures are different in an international community, you know, we have different language, all sorts of differences. So autism being another difference just blends in really naturally. It's just okay. And if I do something really quirky or I make a faux pas, people are just going to think, oh, it's because she's British, or, oh no, it's just, you know, she's international. It's one of those foreigners. You know, I can get away with all sorts of things. And we just feel much more part of a community. And when I say I'm British, I actually identify more with being European, to be honest, because that's kind of how I feel. So, and that's how I'd like to stay.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. And so you were saying that you sort of get away with autistic faux pas, and we do have a lot of those, don't we? And often it's, I find for myself, it's about interpreting others and getting it spectacularly wrong sometimes. Mm-hmm. So do you tell people that you meet that you're autistic, or do you kind of let them decide for themselves what they make of you?
That's a really interesting one. When I was first diagnosed, I literally wanted to skip round going, I'm autistic, I'm an Aspie, I'm an Aspie.
What?
It's like a it's a really proud badge. I'm in Aspie.
Yes.
And I'm really proud to be in Aspie.
Yeah, absolutely.
For other people, it's not. It's not a positive thing, but for me and many, it is. Yeah. Well, because these days I tend to really mix more with far more neurodivergent people than I ever did. It's very, if they haven't noticed already, then yeah, it will always come out. It will come out very quickly. But regarding people I used to know, and even a lot of family members, I don't even talk about it. I don't hide it. And they have seen things like my website recently and stories I've written or whatever on Medium. But don't talk about it with them because they're just not quite on the same wavelength, should we say. But I don't hide it. That's the important thing. I never, never hide it. And all the friends that I do have around me now are very accepting. And even when I first told people, which was, that's a difficult thing. When I first told people, there was an awful lot of, oh, really, are you sure? Or, but you don't look autistic. But it must be really mild, you know, it's not severe. And all those things, which, as you know, and I know, are really insulting, but they come from a good place. They come from the person not knowing, not understanding, and wanting to put you or put me at ease. But I found those quite hard to deal with. So I took it as a learning opportunity. So several friends will tell you they've been gradually drip-fed information about autism, especially in women, for which they're really grateful. But it was quite subtle. And every now and then they say to me, yeah, I realise, Nessa, you've actually taught me a lot, haven't you? And I'm really sorry I said those things at the beginning. And it's okay, because I think I might have said them myself to other people. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you've hit the nail on the head with the very core reason why I'm doing what I'm doing with the show, is because there are so many different, you know, for every autistic person, there's an individual. And yes, there might be some commonalities and there might be some common themes or challenges and there might be some common strengths. But for most people that I've met, in fact, all of them, everyone's completely different. And I do think it's about education. And I think the best way to educate people is to get these voices heard. Yes. And to listen to us, to listen to people, because yeah, your experience is different to my experience and my experience is different, yeah, to the next guest's experience and so on. So exactly. I'm really excited that UK Radio Health have been so sort of groundbreaking with,
Me too.
With encouraging this to happen. But we'll move on. So what do you do in Belgium? I know you've got a whole variety of things you can do and have done. So what, yeah, are you doing there at the moment?
Well, because there's things I can't do, because I have physical disabilities and other stuff as well, and because I burnt out from mononucleosis or glandular fever many, many years ago, back in when I was about 25 years old. So since then, work has been a very difficult thing. But what I do now, I don't work, but I found my autistic voice in the medium of writing mainly. And the odd video that I've recorded, things like that. Because it's my intense passion, that takes up a lot of my time and energy at the moment, which I'm really happy about. So that's a big project, and it has been for the last 6 years, really. Other than that, I just do voluntary work, if you like, but I just like to support people. I guess as a nurse, you go into it wanting to care for people. And that's what I'm still doing. I want to help people. I want to help those people who are less privileged or don't or need help or need support or just information. You know, that's what gives me the reason to live. So as well as the autism, I've done some English learning, English language learning support and things like that. What else have I done? I've just started getting active with advocacy for Addison's disease, which is another rare disease, that's for another day. And also I'm very active in disability advocacy. So, and I'm part of a local organisation, a Belgian organisation, who have lots of people with disabilities who get together and we try and find solutions for architects and other things for all disabilities. So that's really good.
Thank you. You've just summed up another myth buster for me, which is, now I worked in special education with neurodivergent children, young people for quite a number of years. And I found that I'm really interested in how people reach their potential. And I think sometimes there can be external attitudes. Again, this is not a blame thing, but I think there can be unrealistic expectations that if you are neurodivergent, you are not going to achieve much or really be a valued member of society.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm not blaming anyone for that. And I think some of that comes from the internal thought processes we have as well, as we don't fit in, we're not the same as everyone else. But I do believe that I meet so many autistic people with ADHD, people who are dyslexic, etc., who are achieving amazing things in their life.
Yeah,
and very often benefiting their communities, like you, benefiting lots of other people, really fighting for justice, really working for the underdog, and actually really, you know, giving the world something, a real blessing with their presence.
I think so. Absolutely. That's a nice way of putting it. Yeah.
So aside from all of that, of course, you're a parent and a partner. So tell me about your family, including your fluffy support animals, and how your family were diagnosed after you.
Yeah, that's a story. So once I figured out quite quickly, actually, when I was working out that I was probably autistic, I had in mind more than me, even my daughter. But at the time, she wasn't open to anything like that. And there was such a stigma as well. And actually, the stigma's more here in Belgium. So that was a tough one. But I presented it to her in a way, saying, what do you think? Is this mum? You know, do you recognise mum in this? And it was like, oh, God, mum, yeah. Tick, 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 tick. And I was thinking, and it's also you. But that was for later. So I got my diagnosis. And then everyone sat up and sort of went, oh, that's interesting. So next up was my grown-up son, who I have to say, looking back, and it was quite obvious now, but we had no idea. Following him was my daughter eventually. She eventually joined the club. And then last but not least, our most obvious autistic family member, shall we say, my husband. He sat there and said, you're all autistic. Do you think I should maybe get an assessment? And we were going, yes, Dad, duh, yes. So he was the last. And then looking at other family members, we see lots of autistic traits, if nothing else, around family members. And my dad most definitely was, definitely. So, yeah. What was your question about my family other than autism?
Just about you mentioned to me that you have some fluffy support animals. I myself have a dog who's my emotional, I call him my emotional support, because he's actually, the last 8 years has made me so happy.
Oh,
just to have him around.
Don't they? They do.
Yeah.
They're so special. Well, we like to say, I mean, a lot of people say, well, why can't you just have one or two cats? We did have 10 cats, but currently we have a more reasonable 8. why can't you just have one or two? And it's, oh, but I need that many therapy cats, you know, and I do. They've been a great, great support to all of us. And we are convinced that they are all autistic, with a couple of ADHD ones and even maybe a dyspraxic one thrown in. And you know, as you can get.
With eight cats, you've probably got like two each. That's very reasonable.
Yes. Fair enough. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing obviously you're very good at is you've got a wonderful singing voice and you're an amazing songwriter. So we're gonna listen to another one of your songs right now.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Hello, welcome back. It's Evelyn Charmer on Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm talking to Nessie Hughes today of Autistic Ness. Hi, Ness. Welcome back.
Hello.
Hello. It's been really interesting talking to you today. I'm sure our listeners are getting a lot out of it. And Yeah. And if there's anyone out there who wants to contact you or have a look at your work or hear your music, how is best to get in touch with you? And we'll put some links in the bio with the show information as well.
Yeah, that's probably the best thing to do because my memory doesn't even remember the things I've done. So I am on Medium. I've written my kind of shortened story on Medium. And I believe it's now under Autistic Ness as well. If not, Vanessa Hughes. I'm also on YouTube now under Autistic Ness, and there's various videos and my songs and things on there. And obviously my website, autistic-ness.com, which is not ready yet, but you can go to the landing page and sign up to know when it will be ready. I think it's going to be good. I'm really excited.
I'm really excited. I subscribed already myself. Okay, so we've not got that long left now. It's gone so quickly, hasn't it?
Oh, my goodness. I could talk for another 3 hours.
Oh, well, we might have to have you on again. I'm sure you've got a lot to say. So let's go back to misconceptions and myths, because we both agree how frustrating that can be. But also, I think we both represent the fact that most autistic people do understand why the misconceptions happen. And I think one of the things is that once people meet an autistic person, they've met one autistic person, but they might then expect that all autistic people are going to be like that person.
Yeah.
And we talked about earlier about the misconception that we are impervious to emotion or not able to empathize. And you mentioned earlier about when you were first diagnosed as an adult and how some of your friends, family, colleagues would say, but it must be mild and surely not. Mm. And one of the things that people said to me was, but you're one of the most intuitive, compassionate people I've ever met.
I had that too. I had exactly those words, Evelyn. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking, so what? So, you know, for one thing is, I do know what? I think spending 50 odd years not knowing I was autistic and masking and mimicking and watching people and really studying people has made me a fantastic therapist. And it's really heightened my intuition about people.
I bet it has. I can imagine that very much.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think when you can't read, well, not read, but when you find it more difficult to read people's intentions through facial expression, things like that, you learn to read other things and pick up on other.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what it is, isn't it? I think it's like
non-verbal cues.
Your sight's not good or something, you might make up for it with other senses.
Yeah, heightened senses. So, you know, and that sort of sense of injustice. I remember bawling my eyes out as a child. Black Beauty. Our younger listeners won't remember, but some of our middle-aged ones will. And anything to do with animals or to do with trees or to do with nature. And now it's children. And like you, I worked in child protection for a few years alongside social workers, and I had to really learn how to switch that kind of emotive response off.
Yeah.
So what other misconceptions annoy you the most? And I'm sure there are many.
Oh, there are many. They'd be on my website, that is for sure.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's the initial Rain Man, you know, misconception, isn't there? But when you say autism, people seem to think either Rain Man, because that's their only reference in the media, or the child that rocks in the corner of a room or bangs their head against a wall. Yeah, that really is, I've found it. And to be perfectly honest, that was kind of my own reference as well before I knew anything about autism. I'm ashamed to say that, but it was.
So I mean, I can understand that, but the only things out in the mainstream media were Rain Man or someone's lived experience of seeing a child in distress like that. So I just think people didn't have the points of reference that we're getting now. I'm really pleased that it's becoming a lot more mainstream understanding of autism.
So that's definitely one we need to really pack away and get rid of. If you go to a doctor and you say, I think I want to consider an assessment, I think I may be autistic because my child's been diagnosed or whatever, my husband. And it's so common for us to be told, no, you can't be autistic, you're a woman. No, you can't be autistic because you're making eye contact. No, you can't be autistic, you're far too functional and capable, too intelligent, all of those things. And that I find extremely annoying. It's an arrogant barrier to us getting to know ourselves and to getting support and help. So yeah, that's a biggie for me. It's not just women, it's not just children. We're autistic people are in all cultures, all religions, all guises, different colours of skin, boys, girls, men, women. We're everywhere and we always have been and we always will be.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And what advice would you have to neurotypical people wanting to better understand neurodivergent people?
Listen to actually autistic people, especially adults that have the lived experience of this, listen to us a lot, read as much as you can, watch videos, support us, try to be our allies, because we need it, we need you. And just if you don't understand, that's absolutely fine, ask us. If you're not sure what to say and what not to say, ask us. We're really normal, kind people, and generally a lot of us love to just talk all about our autism anyway. So yeah, just ask us, and just know that it's a difference. It's not a disorder, it's not a negative, it's not a deficit, and it's as much a difference as your preference to food, your skin color, your gender identity, and so on. It's just a difference. That's it.
It's just a difference, isn't it, in brain functioning. Thank you for that. What a lovely way to end the show. And I love what you've summed it up for me on the the landing page of your website, autistic-ness.com. Everything you wanted to know about autism but were afraid to ask.
Yeah, I thought that was a good way of putting it.
Yeah. And I will definitely look out for you reading. I know you've written a book. And that's...
Well, I haven't yet, Evelyn. I was asked to just write something about autism for a local website, and unfortunately it turned into a virtual book.
Why unfortunately?
Not unfortunately, actually, but incidentally it did. And so I decided, right, that needs to be in a whole website. And when I've done the website, it needs to be a book. And hopefully it will. So that's the plan. And may I say one thing about those songs that you've played?
Of course.
The wonderful voice thing that you said. Thank you for that. That's really kind.
You have a beautiful voice. Absolutely lovely. Oh, it's very soothing.
Thank you. I am super proud of them. And I am aware that, I'm not a pop singer. I'm not a professional singer, anything. But when I did those three songs back in 1996, they were my life saviors, because I was very, very ill. And that was the only way I could pour out any emotions and my creativity. And not only did I sing them and write the music, I'm not a musician. And I taught myself to play them on a keyboard, and then I recorded them. And it's those kind of things that make me so grateful for my autistic brain, because that is what enabled me to do it.
Absolutely sums it up beautifully. Thanks ever so much, Nessie, for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and hope the sun's shining for you in Belgium.
It is. Yeah.
Lovely. Take care.
Thank you, Evelyn. You too.
Welcome.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. I'm Evelyn Sharma. This is Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. And special thanks to our guest of the week.